This week on Art on the Air, we feature fiber artist who melds function and form in her fine art and in her garment, Deborah Weiss. Next, we feature brush artist Michelle Hunt Newham, whose subjects are rendered with dreamy values called art whimsy. Our spotlight is on Chesterton Art Center's two-day pastel workshop with master artisan Mary Ann Pals, April 2nd and 3rd.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Mary and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight. She's been with us before with a whole interview talking about her artwork, but she has a specific class coming up at the Chesterton Art Center. It's going to be O'Keefe Flowers. It's a whole workshop. It'll be on Saturday, April 2nd and April 3rd, and she's got more details about that. And again, it'll be at the Chesterton Art Center here in Chesterton. Please welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight, Mary Ann Pals. Welcome.
Welcome, Mary Ann.
Thank you.
Well, tell us a little bit, first of all, about the class and what's going to entail. If I was going to sign up for this workshop, actually, tell me all about it.
This is a workshop that I've wanted to do for a few years now. In fact, I was starting to write the curriculum for it back just before the pandemic hit, and then it all just got shelved for a few years. But then I approached Hannah about it recently at the Chesterton Art Center, and she was very excited about it. It's going to be two full days, 9:30 to 3:30 both days, with an hour lunch break. And we're going to delve with pastels into how to create a close-up painting of a single flower. Georgia O'Keeffe was known to say that, you know, when I hold a flower in my hand, it's the whole world right there. And that's what I want to have my students try and wrap their mind and their hands and their art supplies around, is creating a whole world with one flower in focus.
So have you chosen that flower, Mary Ann?
Actually, I'm going to be doing a painting of a red poppy. But my students can use whatever close-up picture of a flower they want. They don't have to be confined to doing that one. Whatever flower turns them on.
I noticed that that it said previous experience recommended but not required. So how would somebody brand new with pastels, what are they going to how are you going to manage somebody who's never worked in that medium?
It's actually not a hard medium to get into, even if you've never dealt with pastels before. It's kind of like finger painting, but with a dry medium. You get lots of dust on your fingers, colored dust. But it's, you know, with a close-up of a flower, there's just a limited number of petals, a limited number of colors. And it's just learning how to use the medium and apply it to the paper. It's really not hard, and it's a very forgiving medium too. If you make a mistake, you just go over the top of it. So
wonderful.
Now, you've recently, since we talked to you last about almost 2 years ago, had some recognitions that came into your life with organizations. And why don't you tell us briefly about those?
I worked for 10 years at getting my master circle status with the International Pastel Society, and I have achieved it.
Yeah.
I am going
Congratulations.
To get, thank you. I'm going to get my master circle medallion at the International Pastel Convention in Albuquerque, New Mexico in June. I understand it's a very heavy metal medallion that's on a special ribbon, and they put it on your neck and you hope not to fall forward and embarrass yourself. And then I also got an article published in Pastel Journal magazine in January, just a month ago, which was a real dream come true, a goal that I've had for a long time of writing an article that gets published in a national art magazine.
Wow. So congratulations all around.
Thank you.
Well, and a lot of your artwork is inspired by things in nature. Obviously, we're talking about flowers right now. And in fact, one quote I like of yours is, "Nature says it best, I just embellish the tale." But tell us about some of the subjects you normally do.
My husband's an avid bird watcher. He's a birding guru. And he has bird feeders out every day on our deck. So the birds literally come to me. And I keep my Nikon cameras handy, and I take pictures all the time. So I do a lot of bird paintings. I also love just doing paintings of wild animals and flowers, of course. Things in nature, especially in the botanical world, things in nature that maybe people would just walk right past if they're hiking, like over at the Indiana Dunes.
When you accentuate like one particular aspect of it, it really becomes so magical.
Thank you. Thank you.
So briefly, and we're getting on about the 2 minutes left, how's COVID impacted you positively or negatively in terms of your creative work?
Well, I actually decided that I wanted to keep teaching even during COVID. So I learned, I learned how to teach via Zoom. And I only teach experienced students via Zoom because it's really hard to teach a beginner when they've never put their hands on pastels before. But I've been teaching via Zoom and getting a lot of work done because I've got the extra time in my studio. So.
And you also had work in the State House some time ago, didn't you? Yeah, that was the Lake Michigan Sunset, like the Lieutenant Governor.
Yes, in the Indiana State House. I'm trying... You know, pre-COVID, it feels like it was like a lifetime ago, but yes, it hung in the Indiana State House for an entire year. It was chosen by the Lieutenant Governor of Indiana to hang in the Indiana State House. That was quite the honor.
Well, before we get to information about the class, how could people on the web find your website to see some more of your work?
MaryannPals.com. MaryannPals.com. And the class will start to get advertised for registrants starting on February 18, which isn't very long, through Eventbrite. So.
Very good. Well, we'd like to welcome back, once again, Maryann Pals, who's been with us before. She has adult classes for the Chesterton Art Center O'Keeffe Flowers Workshop. It'll be on Saturday, April 2nd and April 3rd. And these are all-day type workshops, except for a lunch break, and you can register right now at Eventbrite. Registration opens February 18th. Maryann, thank you for being on Art of the Air Spotlight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air, after 2 decades of designing clothing, she's creating now home sewing patterns for some of her favorite designs. She beautifully melds the function and form of her fine art into her garments. It's a very playful process that remains very intuitive and inventive, and she aims to capture the beauty of all things around her. Please welcome to Art on the Air, Deborah Weiss.
Aloha.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you. Aloha, Esther.
Well, Deborah, our audience always wants to know a little bit about our guests, their background and everything. So what we want to know is how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself.
Oh, essentially, my life probably as doing what I'm doing started close to 55 years ago. I'm going to be 66 soon. So
I started as a teenager selling macrame down at Venice Beach. Grew up in Los Angeles and was always had this little bit of entrepreneurial spirit in the fact that I sold my macrame so I could buy my first 10-speed bike so I could get from place to place.
So what were those macrames? Were they the owls?
They were,
or the...
I used to do curtains for custom orders, but otherwise I had gotten down a keychain, very special, and then going with the belts and the classic of the 70s of what, early 70s of what you would expect, late 60s, early 70s. I also taught at this, at the time it was the lumber store called Lumber City, and they offered art classes because they sold art supplies along with doing all the hardware supplies. So when I think back about it, it's amazing to me how long ago it was.
So, Deborah, dial back just a little bit. We want to hear about your schooling, things like that, before you got out to doing things, even though you created things. Tell us a little bit about that history, too.
I know, like, the home, did your parents or grandparents, were they also great with their hands and made things?
Yes. From what I understand, my dad's mom, who I only met once, then she lived on the East Coast and we lived on the West Coast, she always apparently made a lot of things, and I only remember seeing one of her sweaters. I was probably about 5 when she passed away, so like I said, I had only met her once young. But my mom always, we always sewed. We would sew our Barbie clothes. She would cook. She was creative. She was the kind of creative that would follow patterns and recipes, very precise. And that's one of the things I've noticed in my path is that I diverted from that. I'd like to create and move away. I don't have the patience for precision and for following patterns or recipes. It's like I just constantly am looking and inspired by materials, by objects, and creating from there. When I basically started as far as more focused on the arts was in college. So I started with 2 years of sciences when I went off to college and had lost my brother back in 74 to cancer. And I thought I'd go into medicine at the time and was very disappointed in what was being done and what was able to be done and wasn't focused enough. So I switched to textile design. So that, which I kind of squeezed in 2 years and thought about going to graduate school, but wasn't quite set on my path of what I wanted to do with it. So I went back to medicine and worked as an ultrasound technician for years. And while working, when I had my kids, I started back, always need to create. So I was always making things and creating things. And I ended up raising my 3 daughters alone. So I always had to have a steady job. But I started my business in 2000 and gave up the medical business in 2007, and then the recession hit in 2008. So there was a lot of changes that needed to happen and go from there. I pretty much went from trying to sell wholesale to doing direct customer sales, which is where I met you, Esther, at the Renegade Festival. Uh-huh. So I found it much easier to just present to the world what I wanted to put out there than having stores tell me what they wanted. And I was always very small scale. I had just a couple sewers working with me. And we want to take a step back, Larry. Part of the reason I was able to get started in 2000 is I always thought that I was supposed to be able to make everything myself. And I had my oldest daughter, Hillary Sprode, who's an artist now, a working artist. But she was interning for a friend who said, no, you hire people to do the production part. You don't have to do production. You only have to do the designing and do the art part or the parts you want from it, but not the whole thing. And that's how I got started. Very inspired by my oldest daughter and her art capabilities that I didn't have because I could create three-dimensionally with fiber, but not so good as far as drawing out my ideas. So they pretty much go from my head to my hands is how I work.
I know that when we met at Renegade, and like, I think it was like 2010 or maybe just, I'm not really sure, somewhere in that time frame, and I would visit every year at Renegade to see you specifically, and then of course everybody else. But it was always, you always had, it was so delightful because of the variety. Not only did you have the clothing, but there were little this's and that's, and always just so visually delightful.
Oh, thank you. It was always important and still is important for me to create a lifestyle. So I would pretty much design my clothing and what I wanted to wear. So it wasn't so much for me about fashion, because I wouldn't say that I'm a fashion person, but I love fabric. And it seems the easiest to use fabric is to make it functional rather than it just stacked in drawers or on shelves. So I would find textiles and decide how to create them into something that was functional. But it was also important to me to make it everyday wear. So I didn't never wanted to make something, which I admire that so many people do, that are much more eclectic and eccentric. I wanted the touch of art in it, but also the ability that things could be worn every day if you want, that they don't have to sit in your closet and feel like, oh, I've seen that on her, or, you know, or I've seen it on him and it's not special anymore. I always wanted something that you could wear every day, you could wash, you could, you know, just
it's a very
function was important.
Yeah, you have a very clean aesthetic. It's like they're very the genius comes in the beautiful pairings of the fabrics that I mean, that's what attracted me to your booth when I walked by, is just the unique combinations of fabrics and how wonderful they were. And then I found out you used a lot of textiles from Japan, and it does have that sensibility about it too, a lot of your designs. Did you take from that culture?
I did, very much so. I've always admired and respected it, and only was able to start traveling there the first time in 2016, and then went every year after that until thought I'd go back in 2020, and of course things changed. And I change. I still order fabric from Japan and still have contacts there where I could get things. But their creativity and their sense of style is wonderful. It just always makes me happy. Their craft is incredible.
Yeah, exquisite.
So over the last years, there's been a lot of changes. You brought up, Larry, about my home sewing patterns. I realized that in 2019, when I was doing the craft shows and still designing new collections for a couple times a year, I realized I had done enough along that line, that I didn't need to keep on designing new. And life was changing, and I decided to stop my business as it was and start focusing on my art and allowing people to make my designs. So to take, because I felt and I still feel that my designs are very timeless. And so that by creating them into home sewing patterns, I could reach a much broader community and people can make it their own also. And so I wasn't sitting on overhead and I wasn't constantly having the pressure to come up with something new, but to be able to focus now a lot on my art, which I belong to a group called California Fibers here, where I have been able to show and have been submitting more work for other shows and able to get that out there. So that's been wonderful. There's definitely a fine line between showable work and sellable work, and finding that balance is where I've been the last couple years.
Rugs. How did you do the rugs, like back in the 70s too, the rug hooking, and now you're just modernizing it a bit? Or
I had tried it back in the 70s. I never got into it. And then a few years back when I moved after the recession, there was a lot of changes in my life. I had to do a bankruptcy. I had to start again. I had to figure out, because I'd given up the day job in medicine, and I had to figure out, do I go back to medicine or do I stick with the business, which is, like I said, I gave up the wholesale end of it and focused more on the direct customer end and scaling down, so not as much overhead. And when I was cleaning out some stuff and having to move, I found my lab shark and decided, let's play. And was at the time had invested in some old knitting machines, and everybody who was getting rid of knitting machines was getting rid of old acrylic yarns, which surprisingly are my favorite for the lab shooking because of the brilliant colors. And once again, I don't plan. I sit down with a basket full of yarns in front of me and start cutting colors and start seeing what it creates as I work, which is pretty much the same with the clothing, as I'll just start pulling and seeing, you know, as far as the combination of fabrics or how things come together. So I've been teaching a lot of classes these last 2 years now that we've had the Zoom culture. And a lot of it is to let go, improvisational making and reacting from the materials in front of you and letting your hands react rather than having something completely planned, just to look and see what's happening and work within that constraint.
And with that, you mean sort of you have your scrap pile and you're using your scraps just as is. You're not manipulating that. You're just taking it as it is and creating something more with that.
Yeah, exactly. So I just pull a pile of scraps in front of me and start, you know, working with them in any respect, either whether or not it's more like a quilt where I'm sewing them together on a sewing machine and later stitching them, or collaging them where I'm up by the iron, ironing them out and laying them on top until they create a piece. And then from there, I keep on working to create the stitchings, which is part of my artwork. And I would like to eventually put that, some of that. I've done one jacket like that where I put one of the pieces back into a vintage kimono that was actually not a nice one, but it made it lovely. I think it made it all better because it wasn't anything special that I was working with that somebody else had given to me. But I think also learning to work with what we have left over, you know, especially in these times that we have so much scrap and so many things left over that it needs to be used up and it needs to have a new life, which is great.
Those moth-eaten sweaters should be, I crochet different designs on top of those holes to create a whole piece again. So
yeah,
I think it's, yeah.
Mike, I see in the background that you have quite a bit of artwork that's not wearable and also on your webpage. So tell us about the other art that you have in your life.
So one of the, because I have been making all my life, so I have pieces back in the 70s and 80s. I did the needlepoint. So I always had pieces that I would work on and take to work with me at my lunch break. I've never been able, one who could sit, be, not do something. You know, as a kid, I made afghans. My mom taught me how to crochet, to make afghans and blankets. I've always done or made something in my life. And part of the artwork really happened in 2008 when the recession hit. I had been making purses is how I started in 2000, and I used a lot of vintage scarves, and I had somebody who was sewing the purses for me, and I would go down once a week and pick out all the combinations, and they lost their sewer. We couldn't continue. We also lost the manufacturer for one of the clasps that I was using was no longer being made in the States, and I didn't really want to order from China. And it was a lot of things had changed. So I went down there and picked up 4-car SUV loads of scrap scarves to come home and sort through. And I was sitting in at the time I had a space that was more like a storefront and a warehouse that we were working out of. And I had an internal debate of, do I go back to doing ultrasound or do I stay with my art that was my passion that I've done all my life, but really stick with it as a business? Because once again, I had only given up the ultrasound the year before. And at this point, my kids, I had 2 kids in college, one in high school. So they were getting older. So I decided as I would sit there and debate, I started my collage and stitching, which I called my Control Chaos series. So I would pull from all those scarves, and that is where a lot of my art began. And as far as the stitching, I would spend hours and hours stitching it and working with it and not knowing necessarily what it would become. I had a few framed and I just kept on going. My dad was getting older and I would drive him to his doctor. So I'd always have stitching with me. I'd always have something while I was figuring out what was next in my life. And then when I started traveling, once my kids were old enough and I could, I started traveling in 2016 and got very inspired by the chaos. I also moved to the city rather than the suburbs, and which I love to walk. I love the chaos. I love looking behind windows into fences, all the mess on the streets, the cracks in the sidewalks, and a lot of my art with these scraps that were misshapen, so to speak, not perfect rectangles, not perfect shapes in any way, have been inspired by what I call my home and garden series. So taking in what's around us, and it was especially pertinent these last 2 years when we had to shelter in our home. So the thoughts of being looking in and out of windows, peering in and out, you know, seeing what's going on, and to take a step back with those collage pieces that I was working on my Control Chaos series. Part of them was collaging several layers and then stitching them so they're all flat. So the concept was is that our soul being is who we are. We're one person, but we've collected all these experiences and we've collected a lifetime of changes and different paths that we weren't know that was going to be open to us. And that's what they represented to me, is layering all the transparencies and the different fabrics on top, but stitching them flat because it becomes one. So we are who we are. And I think I've carried through on some of that over in my clothing designs. Like I say, the fact that they're meant to be everyday wear, they're meant to just be put on and comfortable, and so on and so forth.
And so, like, but you've really expanded the crocheting too. When I looked at your Instagram, you're doing all these, like tank sort of tunic things. They're so adorable.
I'm going back to my clothing design where I don't need to be dependent on somebody else to sew and make and have overhead. I'm using all my little inputs of recreating patterns of things that I tried to create and cut and sew that didn't work, and I'm able to do it with the full fashion crochet, and I'm having a great time with it. I'm hoping to do Renegade here in LA if I get accepted, and hopefully be back in Chicago in September. So I'm just working on compiling enough pieces to have with me, but it's enjoyable.
So Debbie, I saw that I think it was a couple of years ago, you were offering like kits. Are you going to go back to doing that as well? Didn't you have like a tote kit, I think?
I had a few different kits that I put up as far as with the sewing and with my scraps. I might with the patterns eventually, but I'm trying not to hold on to too much fabric. It depends. I'm thinking about if I do the festivals, I will bring patterns, that hard copy patterns rather than just digital, which digital is wonderful because I could hit the whole world. But if I do festivals, so it's possible if I do that, I'll create more kits and bring in some of my Japanese fabrics that people can't get elsewhere and be able to make it that way. So that's all thoughts of possibilities of what's next.
Yeah, all the percolating.
You talked about the 2008 recession, how that impacted you, but very briefly, tell us how COVID impacted you, positively or negatively.
Not necessarily. Well, that's a tough one. I was grateful that I had closed my business in January of 2020 and didn't have the overhead. The people had worked for me for so long, I tried to give them business, and I got into mask sewing immediately. And I never spent so much time on my sewing machine as I did for the first 2 months of lockdown making masks. So at the end of March, I must have made till till May must have made over about 3,000 masks, which I still can't believe. But as far as getting through, I guess it was beneficial in the fact that I had so much time to sit here and work. So I've gotten a lot of work done and a lot of introspection of seeing actually how I work, things that you take for granted because you just do it. I think teaching has also been, which with once again with COVID, with the Zoom area, has been worthwhile for me. It's been great as far as the teaching aspect of it, of connecting to people worldwide. So those to me are the two good takeaways. But
and how are you, how are Hillary and you collaborating now?
We pretty much do our own thing at this point. She has a baby. She lives in Portland. Before, it was always my design. We were just working together, and then she started her blanket business, introduced probably about 7-8 years ago in Chicago. And so it was, we were always together, working together, but, you know, as far as the shows, but each of our businesses were separate businesses.
What are you looking forward to doing now that COVID's over? We only about a minute left here also, Deborah.
Traveling. Traveling more and more, seeing the world again, being inspired, and continuing.
Very good. Well, tell us how people can find you, both on the web, Instagram, and getting in touch with you.
Perfect. My website is Specs and Keepings. So it's S-P-E-C-K-S-A-N-D. Keepings, K-E-E-P-I-N-G-S, and the Instagram is the same, and I try to answer any DMs anybody sends me or any messages, and I love connecting with people. I think that's what I've missed the most about COVID, is that interaction, and what I've missed about the craft fairs is being able to connect to everybody.
Well, we're so glad you connected with us today. We appreciate that. That's Deborah Weiss, specsandkeeping.com, and also on Instagram. There will also be a link on our website if you click on her picture. And after all designing is closed, she's thrilled to be able to create these home sewing patterns and pretty soon to get out on the circuit again and to see people face-to-face. Deborah, thank you so much for being on Art
in
the Air.
Thank you so
much.
Thank
you, Larry. Thank you, Esther. Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air, she's a brush artist. Now, she refers to her style as art whimsy, with strong suggestions for, you know, using everyday things with a dreamy value. Her passion remains painting the everyday, like portraiture, and that's what fascinates her, and she has a strong pull in that direction. Please welcome to Art on the Air, Michelle Hunt Newham. Welcome, Michelle.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good morning.
Well, we like to always tell our guests and find out a little bit about them. I always like to see how they got from where they were to where they are now. So tell us about, you know, where you grew up, where you went to school, everything else, as much about your family you want to share and how you got to where you are now.
Well, I grew up between Gary, Indiana, and then we moved South Maryville. And I became an adult, a young adult, I married, at first I married my high school sweetheart and moved to Minnesota and lived there for 20 years. I also experienced a second marriage up there, and, that particular time in my life has blessed me with 5 children, of whom every mother crow thing serves as the blackest, but these kids they are the icing on the cake of life, and hanging out with your adult children is just the best. So
pretty fabulous.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. It's just the best.
Are they all over the country or are they close by?
They are. I have a daughter who's also an artist. She has her master's in fine arts, who lives in Portland, Oregon. My closest son lives in Minnesota. I have, my youngest son he just got promoted to major in the Marine Corps. He's out in California right now at Camp Pendleton, soon to be deployed places unknown. And then I have 2 sons that live in Virginia. One is a nurse practitioner in Richmond, and my other son just retired from being a professional firefighter, and now he works in the school system.
Fantastic.
Oh, and I have four granddaughters. Oh, my goodness. Four granddaughters.
Oh, how sweet.
Well, that's the most important thing, right?
Beautiful places to go visit, too.
In your youth, was art part of your life growing up?
Yes. It actually, of course, when you're young, you don't realize what's going on until you reflect on those times later on in your life. And I do recall spending a lot of time either drawing or building things. I was fascinated with my dad's tools. I wish I would have learned more about construction, period, because that's something that is very interesting to me. But yes,
what types of things did he do with the tools then? So was he the creative force in the household?
No, he just provided the thing. Although later in my dad's life, he took up a brush and started oil painting. So that was an itch that he decided to scratch. But he was, oh my goodness, he was in his 70s when that started. So I'm very grateful that he was able to answer that call for himself also. But no, I would do things. I remember a specific project that I worked on. I took a shoebox and I made a little house out of it I had shingles out of wood and the exterior of the house. And I think I was like 10 or 11 years old. I used fire brick and I chipped away at the fire brick to make it look like stone on the outside. Well, ultimately, it was quite heavy for the foundation of just being a shoebox out of cardboard. But it was a really fun project. It was cool.
It's amazing how those kind of things pass down. I know my grandfather was a machinist on the railroad. I never met him. And so my dad always was fascinated with tools. And a generation later, I worked in theater, obviously. And real quick, I work with tools and do stuff. Never really did a lot around the house. But my daughter, now that she's married, she's all building beds in the house and doing stuff and constructing things. It's like, yeah, I said, I kind of failed you in actually showing you that because I did all my building there. So anyway, you're now back in the area now. You live in Valparaiso, and you do have a gallery. Now, I don't know if it's a home gallery or you have a location, but tell us about that.
It's a little studio. I've actually set it up in my home. I have, we're audio anyway, but I have this little area that I have a couple different light sources, natural and two others that help me create the next project that I'm going to work on.
So what artificial light do you favor?
I recently was gifted for Christmas. One of my sons gave me, I don't even know what it's called. I have an Edison bulb, which is very soft light. But then I have this contraption. Well,
Otlight?
It's an Otlight.
Sort of like is it an Otlight?
I guess. It was completely a foreign thing to me. When I was gifted it, he set it up. We plugged it in. I've been using it, and more is the better.
Yeah, the Otlight is like what they call daylight balance for, well, maybe get technical, 55,000 Kelvin versus like a standard incandescent is like a lot warmer looking. So, but it affects how the end up piece is. So Otlights give you much more balanced light.
And it has different settings. I mean, I could advertise for it because it's been a great tool. I did not know that's what it was called. I feel remiss. But I thank you for educating me on what the heck it is I'm using.
So tell us a little bit about your art. Of course, Esther will ask you much more in-depth questions than I will. But tell us a little bit about what you like to paint, what mediums you use, and all that.
Well, I found myself, my two younger children, my daughter and my son, who's in the military, got their bachelor's degrees at Valparaiso, both of them in fine arts. And it just so happened that through a very strange situation, I lost my job on a January 2nd. I think this is going on 7 years ago now. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I was putting, back when I was job hunting as a younger woman, you could walk in, you could go to businesses, one right next to the other. You could get an interview right then and there. But now, because of technology, this is, I'm not very impressive on a computer. So I never got an interview, ever. So I was doing laundry one day and I saw my kids' supplies downstairs. And even though I had dabbled in artwork before, it wasn't something that was going to put bread on my table. So I started out really slow. Actually, I started with pastels and just working on paper. And I would post things on Instagram, which was a very small venue for me. And I would get positive feedback on that. And then I took a leap of faith, and anybody who does anything creatively, and I think the three of us are in that, when you do that, you are opening yourself up emotionally, and there's a bit of thicker skin you have to have, because some people might be critical about what you're doing, but you just have to forage on. So I took that leap of faith and I started posting on Facebook. Then it developed into a professional page, because personally, I really don't like it when people put on their page all this stuff. And it's like, move it to another place. So I did that, which worked for me. And as far as what I do, I moved on from pastel. As much as I love pastel, it is very messy for my little studio area. And I also wanted to explore watercolor. I had never done watercolor before, ever. So I introduced myself to that and then onto acrylic. And I started painting things around me. I think you had mentioned that earlier. The things, kind of like things that would tell my story for me, that seemed to resonate with other people. And I have always been interested in portraiture work. So that was something that I continued to explore, which a great, most of my commissions are portraits in either humans or animals.
So I'm going to ask something that, knowing the answer is going to vary depending on your mood in the day, of course, but when you, like you, are so skilled in multimedia and very proficient in, you know, lots of different media, what's your sequence of choosing what you're going to do? Like, if you wake up, like, is it image and then material, or do you wake up thinking, I feel like watercolors, or maybe taking the day today, all the snow, I think I'll do a snow scene. So what is the sequence for you?
Actually, a lot of that is dictated by the image. And also, I try as much as possible to go to acrylic first, because I really enjoy painting on canvas. I varnish these pieces when they're done. Many times they look like oils. And it's easier for my clients to frame something without the glass, the mats, and even though I provide mats with my watercolors. But I try that sequence first. But if it's something that, and whenever I do a project, I know what it's going to look like when it's done in my head before I start it. So that also guides me on what medium I want to use.
So with your commissions, and again, this will vary. Is it, do you generally suggest to the client what material you think might, be the best for what they're doing?
Actually, I have not run across, when we talk commissions, these people take a leap of faith, and I've been very, very grateful. There's very, 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 very minimal micromanaging, which I'm sure you guys can also appreciate. And we don't discuss, because I really don't know until I see the image. But I have not had anybody claim that they aren't happy with it, or they wish that I would have done something else. And they normally don't even, I think so many people are, they're novices to this whole thing. And we kind of just journey together.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
So are you a voracious photo taker? So are a lot of
yes.
the things that you do personal, are they from your own images?
Yes. I think when I first started, I would scramble on Google looking for images of lemons or peaches but it started to feel kind of plagiaristic to me. These were other people's images.
Yeah.
And so then I made the move to just taking my own photos. And I have really appreciated that journey. When I was doing the European market in Chesterton, we would set up early on Saturday morning. And there was a Saturday morning that I had an idea. I had worked at retail shop at one point in my life in the area. And people would come in many times and ask, do you have anything of the dunes or of this area? And most of the time it was not really. So I thought, I'm going to take pictures of some of the buildings in Chesterton. And I started creating a series of those iconic places, whether it's the floral cart or shells. And I painted these and I put together a foursome of what I call art cards. So people could buy a pack of art cards, four different assorted images that are like images for $10. And it was, I ventured out to Michigan City and then Valparaiso, and it worked out really, really well. I'm really proud of those series.
Gosh, Michelle, you just triggered a memory for me. So the schoolhouse shop, was that you in the schoolhouse shop?
Yes.
Is that, oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Gosh, beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
Talk about surrounded, no matter which way you look, with beautiful images.
Oh, my gosh. I loved being there more than words could say. It was a great opportunity. The people that would come in, the surroundings, it was magical. It really is a magical place.
And Roy and Jim are just so lovely.
Yes.
Flowers downstairs, those flowers. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Audrey. Been, oh,
yes.
Lake Effect florals. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
So beautiful.
Well, one thing we like to ask our guests in the pandemic years, how's COVID impacted you? Some people found it's been a more creative period, and some found that it's been very much of a withdrawal. And the second part of that question is, what are you looking forward to as we look like we're coming out of the pandemic?
Well, I almost feel embarrassed to say this, but 2020 was financially my best year. I don't know if people, I'm not really sure why, if there was more flow of money or just, you know, doing things that they had thought of doing before. And now because they were homebound in many cases, I really don't have the answer to that, but it launched a bigger part of what I'm doing now. And I'm very appreciative about that, but I'm also very keen in realizing what a horrible year that was for pretty much everybody. I'm no longer doing the European market. 2020 kind of pulled the plug on that for me. I'm hitting 70 this year, and that's a lot of setup for one person, and wearing a mask. When I was invited back when non-essentials could come back to the market, I just thought and during the summer when it hits 90, that's a long day and it's grueling. It is. I appreciated it though very much.
So, Michelle, then your work, and then we'll get your contact information. People can contact you for different types of portraiture or other types of things And so tell us about that process. If someone contacts you, not so much the contact information, but how you work through that, your work process.
a lot of this has been just word of mouth. I'll put things, I'll have people ask me questions as like a DM on my professional page, Studio at Maison de Michelle, which is Facebook. And I use Instagram. My handle there is Girl with Two Different Colored Eyes. And I post my work there, but that hasn't hit with any kind of work. So mostly it's Facebook and, just word of mouth. People that have seen, I got a gal from California get in touch with me because she saw something from the area that I had painted, which was portraiture work. And, that blossomed then into a relationship. So
yeah, Michelle, the work is just so engaging. I just, I couldn't stop scrolling, actually.
Oh, thank like you.
Very engaged. You just have, you so capture the essence, whether it's a person or an animal. You know, the animals are just so charming and so pettable.
I was going to say that one of the things when I do work with a client, I ask them to send several photographs because it might be their favorite picture, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to resonate in the artwork.
Right.
And my whole thought on artwork is that you need to tell a story. It can't just be like a school picture where
you need to feel the essence, which is what you capture.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate that. Some images are people walking away. You don't even see their face.
That's what I love about your work, too. It's like everyday life. You know, you can insert yourself right in.
Yes. Thank you.
One of the questions I had back to your set of different building pictures that you put together, did you do those all original and package them or repaint them? Or did you then go and have them lithographed or printed?
I have a wonderful giclée maker at Sharp Eye in Michigan.
Okay. We know, Ryan.
Oh my goodness. They hooked me up. I thank them. I wish I had a nickel for every time I thank them for allowing me to have this prolific lifestyle that I never would have imagined. And I'm very, very appreciative.
Yeah, we've had them on the show, and we know about the work that they do in supporting artists in the area. So
they're amazing.
So, any project you're working on currently?
I just finished up a cat for someone, kind of an in memoriam of it, and those are what I get a lot, and when you paint portraits, you become intimate with your subject.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you're in their eyes. You're right there. And, it always makes me melancholy when I'm doing these things. And then next I'm going to start a landscape of somebody who, had traveled to Italy, I believe. I have to upload those pictures and I'll hit that.
What does Michelle like to do outside of art? What are some of your other things like for fun?
Granddaughters.
Traveling with my children. This year already we're set up to, I've always wanted to go to Maine. Of the five children, the ones who can make it. If the others have commitments, you know, we could catch up doing other things. So we're going to Maine, we're going to Boston, and then we're going to go up to Maine. Next year, I just found out a couple days ago, my son set us up for going to France next year.
Oh, wow.
And I'm definitely looking forward to that because I've never been to Europe.
So are you passing the art along with the granddaughters? Do you do projects with them?
Oh, my goodness. Most definitely. Sure. If there's an empty box somewhere, by the end of the day, it's already painted. It could be a fruit stand or you name it. We just have a blast.
Well, Michelle, we need to kind of wrap it up actually here. So please tell us how people can find you, your Facebook page and all the other contact information if they want to get in touch with you and see your work.
Okay. I have two Facebook kind of places. And my professional one is studio at Maison D. Michelle. You can also contact me. I'll add you as a friend on my personal page, which is Michelle Cosmas Hunt Newham. I'm on Instagram as Girl with Two Different Colored Eyes. And we are going to be having up in May, the 5x5 is going to be going on at the Beverly Shores Depot. So that's coming up too.
Very good. Well, we're pleased to have Michelle Hunt Newham on today, telling us about her art whimsy journey and painting everything from portraits to whatever her passion is. Michelle, thank you so much for being on Art on the Air.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Esther. Thank you both.
You've been listening to Art on the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther. I'm Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Mary and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show